This is Stellacast, episode 16. Hello and welcome to this episode of Stellacast. My name is Jacob Burton. Thank you so much for joining me. In this episode, we interview Dave Mott, who is one of the original Stella Culinary Breadheads, who now runs his own micro bakery in Canada. So he took all the tools, techniques, and information that he got from Stella Culinary and elsewhere, to be fair, and used it to make some amazing sourdough bread that people are now purchasing from him, which is really cool. And in the conversation, we go through his trials, tribulations, some of the pitfalls that you run into when you first are learning how to make your own sourdough bread, things that will commonly frustrate people. Now, before we get into the interview with Dave, I want to mention real quick that my culinary bootcamp workbook, the F-Step curriculum, the same curriculum that I use at my culinary bootcamps and when doing private training programs for my clients, is now available for download in PDF version. So if you go to stellaculinary.com, and at the top of the page in our navigation bar, there's a new link to the shop link. So you click on the shop link, and it will take you to that page where you can download my very unique written curriculum. And it is unique in the sense that, well, first of all, I wrote it. No one else wrote it. But it is my way for teaching people how to stop following recipes and start creating. So it is a technical approach and a lens through which you look at creating recipes and dissecting recipes, figuring out why they work, why they don't work. And in my opinion, it's really the best way for people to learn how to cook. Instead of following recipes and learning through trial and error, this really dissects, starting with flavor structure and then sauce making, technique, execution, preparation. It dissects what it takes to create a great recipe, what it takes to create a great dish. So that's now available on stellaculinary.com. Just click the shop link and you can download the first section of the F-Step curriculum for free. So you can read through it. You're going to learn some really good tips and tricks for flavor structure, balancing flavors, how to use salt, how to use acid, and get a sense of what the F-Step curriculum is really all about. And that way, if you love it, which I know you will, you can then download the full version. Now, with that said, let's jump right into our interview with Dave Mott of Rye Knot Breads in Canada. All right, welcome to Stellacast, Dave Mott, who, Dave, you've been around on the Stella Culinary Forums for quite a while now, and you're kind of one of the original breadheads, yeah?
Blonde, actually. Yeah, I think it's been about 2.5 years.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, I remember when I first came out with my bread and sourdough material, you were really active on the forums, and you know, you took the little bit of information that we went through, and you just ran with it and started baking like crazy. What inspired you to start baking bread like that?
Well, you know, a few things. A few years ago, I met a good friend of mine, Ben Spears, who this guy was into bread baking big time, and it's all he could ever talk about. And so, you know, just being with this guy inspired me, and he actually ended up giving me a little bit of his sourdough starter culture. I had no idea what it was at the time, so of course I ended up killing it. I felt so bad, you know, and I wish I only knew now what I knew then. And then, you know, a few years later, I was finally wanted to start some sourdough, looking around online, came across, you know, you on the web, and then it just went from there.
Now, what are some of the struggles that you've had with your sourdough journey?
Some of the struggles I would say would be, I guess just like, you know, first getting started in general is I guess it's just always a struggle, you know, just with like timing and just getting the feel for the way that the dough is when it goes through the process. You know, at first I was always working off, you know, just off my watch with times, and seeing how that went. And then, and then I guess after that, is when it started getting better, and I was more used to the feel of the way the dough would go through its different stages.
Yeah, I find the hardest thing when teaching sourdough is there's definitely this intuitive feel that develops over time. And it frustrates people because, they want you to give them the answers. And it's like, well, you know, you're getting into sourdough bread baking, which is really kind of, in my opinion, the pinnacle and the most difficult form of bread baking there is. And you're working with a live culture. So it's almost like a dance. You can't force it. You can't just say, oh, I'm going to add more commercial yeast, or I'm going to, you know, put it in this proofing box and speed things up. It's really getting to know your starter and how it acts. And it's funny too, because, you know, I know how my starter acts in my environment, but then interacting with all the other sourdough bread bakers on the Stella Culinary forums and on other bread forums, the Fresh Loaf, you see they all have their different strategies and their different timings. And you come to realize over time that, wow, this really is a feel thing. And everyone's starter really is different. Everyone's environment is different. And I think that's one of the for me at least, the unique fulfilling elements of baking with sourdough.
Yeah. Yep, definitely, for sure.
So are you just baking predominantly with sourdough now, or are you doing yeasted breads as well?
No yeasted. It's all sourdough out of the culture that I started with you 2.5 years ago.
And you just started doing what you're calling a micro bakery. Will you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, just out of my house. At first I was just handing out just to some friends, just for the fun of it. And they got back to me and they're like, Dave, this is awesome bread. Great. Hey, thanks. And, you know, I just kind of had this idea for a few years about, you know, trying something on my own. You know, you only live once, and hey, why not, you know, try to work for yourself? And I started becoming passionate about this, sourdough baking. And so I thought about, well, how can I go about doing this? You know, it's expensive to rent, you know, any kind of studio in Toronto. The prices are ridiculous. And so how am I going to go about this? And, you know, I kind of heard of micro bakeries here and there, and I thought I would give it a shot and try a bread share program, which I kind of learned about through Food Share, where here in Ontario, a lot of our Ontario farmers create this food share program where people, they give them so much money per month, and then whatever they grow for the season is what they get. And I thought, well, I'm going to try this bread share program where people can give me whatever they want, and then I'll put out what I'm going to bake for the week, and they order that, and then hopefully everybody's happy.
So is it almost like a subscription service to your bread, where people pay you weekly or monthly and they get X amount of loaves a week?
So far it's something like that. I guess I'm not going off weekly or monthly. I'm just going off amounts right now. You know, it's just all kind of, it's all just being tested right now and seeing how it works. So far, I have some customers that have given me some money, and I'm just subtracting each loaf that they order, you know, per week off of that amount, and until they're ready to pay some more again.
Okay, so it's almost like a prepaid phone card, but for bread.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's awesome. So, what kind of bread are you making? I mean, I know you're using your sourdough starter, but what are your formulations like? Tell me about the different styles that you're creating.
Yeah, for sure. The types of flours I'm working with, I've tried my best to always local source my flours, and I've done that, and it's all organic and it's all whole grain, which I'm pretty excited about. And I've gone through a few different flours, but I've kind of narrowed it down to the two companies that I'm using right now. So I love their flours. So what I'm doing right now is I work with just a whole wheat flour, spelt flour, rye flour, and then there's a flour, it's a heritage flour called a Red Fife, which is definitely my favorite grain to work with.
And Red Fife, that's kind of like a strong whole wheat, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, let's give them a shout out. Who are you getting your flour from?
Sure. CIPM Flowers, which is just north of Belleville, Ontario. And then I believe there's a local flower just in and around the Toronto area. And of course, I forget the name of it right now because I'm so nervous about being here with you.
Oh, no. We're just talking bread, man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So do you live in Ontario?
Yeah, I do, right downtown Toronto.
Okay. And then the name of your micro bakery is Rye Knot Bread House and Bakery.
Yeah.
I subscribe to your Facebook page, and I'm looking at your bread photos, and they are gorgeous. And I can't believe, so correct me if I'm wrong, but you're saying that you're not using any white bread flour. Just you're going straight whole wheat and spelt, right?
No. I do. Right now I'm at 30% whole grain.
Okay.
Yeah, and then 70% organic bread flour.
Okay, I was going to say, you are working some sort of magic tricks. I'm looking yeah. at the expansion, the oven spring of these loaves, and the bread's also, and also too, I saw you had like the, what do you got going on, like four Dutch ovens that you're using to bake these breads with?
Actually, I can do 8 in my oven now.
Really?
Yeah. I got lucky just hitting up Canadian Tire one day with my wife, Alexi. You know, like any kitchen geek, stop into the kitchen section, and they had a sale on these Dutch ovens. And so I picked up just one for a test, and then it worked out great. Like, the sizing was awesome. And so I went back and I bought 7 more. So I can do batches of 8 now in my own home oven.
What size Dutch oven are you using?
A 3-quart.
A 3-quart, okay.
Yeah.
And let's get inside baseball, because if they're not breadheads, they should probably start dropping out of this conversation right now. Because I'm interested in what you're doing. And so you're doing a 3-quart, you're using a 3-quart Dutch oven. What are you scaling your boules to?
I'm scaling them to around 800 grams when they're finally finished and they're shaped. Yeah, when they're shaped and they're going into the Dutch oven, they weigh around 800 grams each.
Well, that's a pretty big loaf, and you're not having a issue with those in the 3-quart?
No, not at all. Actually, I used to do your size. You know, which was, I think it was at the, it's 750, right? Like total flour content. So that for me, it was great at the time. But it was just a little too big for, you know, just to kind of to do the process I wanted to do. So I ended up just experimenting and downsizing, and I came up with about this size. The great thing about these Dutch ovens is they do fit in perfect in the bottom, but when they do expand, they hold the shape. So when it does rise, it rises up the sides nicely and gives you this, this beautiful round boule when it comes out.
Yeah, and that's probably really helpful too for when you are using higher percentages of whole wheat flour, because it helps to, hold the shape. I know that if I go, you know, if you go a lot of whole wheat in your bread formulation, sometimes you will definitely have some issues with collapsing, during the oven spring or even transferring it to the oven itself. So I'm assuming that having that smaller 3-quart is kind of almost helping to guide the loaf upwards and giving it structure so it doesn't spread out too much or collapse, which are issues that you will commonly have with whole wheat.
Yeah, definitely. And also with larger Dutch ovens, right, where it's not holding that shape. You know, like 70% of the time I had pretty good loaves coming out of the larger Dutch ovens, but since it wasn't in contact with the sides, you know, sometimes it does spread out. You don't get the oven spring you're looking for. So it was always a challenge, but man, these 3-quart ones, and the amount of dough I've got, it really rocks. It's awesome.
So you're doing about a 30% whole wheat mix, right? What is in your 30%? Is it all red fife, or are you doing like whole wheat and some spelt?
So for now what I'm doing is if I was to do a loaf, it would be like 30% red fife. Mm-hmm. 70% bread flour.
Okay.
And I do want to up that. I'm going to start experimenting. Like, I've done some experimentations already with like 50% and stuff, but that was a while ago when I was, you know, I really wasn't kind of more informed as I am now. So I'm really gearing up to take it up to 40%, see how that works, and then 50%. So I've got a lot of experimenting to do within the next little while just to up that whole grain content.
And what's your strategy going to be for that?
Oh man. Just because of my work schedule, it's right now, the strategy I have works fine. So I think when it comes to upping that whole grain content, I down my water content to 65%, just to make up for that delayed fermentation. Like, it's a pretty long one, 18 to 20 hours. So I was having some issues. So I think I'm probably after going to work with a little higher water content. It might be back up to like 68 or 70%.
Yeah, I've found in general when I'm working with whole wheat, I'm almost always upping my water content just because it'll soak up so much more. And then the best luck that I've always had with whole wheat is doing soakers overnight with it. So using like the whole wheat as my pre-ferment, and a lot of times too, I'll sift the whole wheat through, you know, it's like a conical strainer, like a wire mesh, nothing as fine as like a chinois, but just to pull out. So like for every 100 grams of sifted whole wheat, I'll maybe pull out like 7 grams of like the really big chunks of bran that if they get in your loaf, they can damage the gluten structure. And then, so I'll take the sifted flour portion and I'll soak that overnight. Sometimes I'll even use that as my pre-ferment and inoculate it with the sourdough starter. But then that bran that I sifted out, I'll use that to coat the boules the next day. So right when I form them, and then when I put them in the proofing basket, I'll roll them in that bran. And that bran toasts up really nice and gives an awesome texture on the outside. But the 100% whole wheat sourdough bread that isn't super dense is like it, that's something I've been chasing after for years, and I still haven't really gotten to the point where I'm super happy with what I produce.
Yeah, it's hard, eh? Once you up that whole grain content, man, you're entering a whole new world, eh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I just can't get around, you know, just the fact that the gluten structure is damaged by the whole grain, and it's so heavy. And what's the most heartbreaking and frustrating part about it is, you know, you can get it to the point with doing pre-soakers and then doing stretch and folds, not over-kneading, to where you have the boule in the proofing basket and it rises and it looks gorgeous. And then when you turn it out into the Dutch oven or onto the stone, it just collapses underneath its own weight.
Yeah.
And it comes out dense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, really dense. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's something I've been playing with. But I think you could easily, especially if you up the hydration, you can get a very respectable and flavorful loaf at 50% whole wheat, no problem.
Yeah, I've seen people on the fresh loaf, they're like doing 80% hydration on some of their loaves. And it's gorgeous what comes out, the just the structure of the loaf in general and the crumb, you know, it's closed, but it's not dense. It's really nice stuff that I've seen all around people doing with high hydrations.
Yeah, and that's really important for whole wheat. I mean, I've found that when I was doing my 100% whole wheat tests, I would take the hydration to 80-85%, and the dough would feel like something that was more around 70% hydration if I was using all bread flour.
Yeah.
So that whole wheat definitely does absorb a lot more water.
Mm-hmm.
So you're doing is that the only sort of boules that you're doing right now, is the 30% red 5 and 70% bread flour, or do you have some other things up your sleeve?
I do have, I think in total now about 6 or 8 different styles of, or different flavors, I guess you could say. Of bread, so I've got, yeah, I have just standard red fife, just because it's. Have you ever had red fife before?
No, I haven't. It's. Yeah. I think it's a Canadian thing. So I've never seen it in the States. I never heard about it until you and other guys from Canada started talking about it on the forums.
Yeah, I think you're right. I've had a lot of questions from people in the States about red fife. I guess it must be just a Canadian wheat. From what I remember reading, I think it did come over at the turn of the century from Scotland over into Canada. But it's my favorite grain to work with so far, and it just tastes amazing. So I just leave that as a standard loaf with red fife. But then I do olive and rosemary. I do like a whole wheat honey. and then a whole grain, just a standard whole grain spelt. And I think for the first time for next week, I offered up just a straight sourdough white boule because I want to see how that goes. I haven't really, you know, I've worked with whole grains this whole time, so I've never had a chance to actually bake a full on white bread before. Uh-huh. So I'm pretty excited about to see how that comes out and how it actually tastes.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is they're really enjoyable to bake and they taste really good. When you start working with, 30%, 40% whole wheat flour in your sourdough formulation, and then you go back to baking with just straight 100% bread flour, it almost feels like you're cheating. the dough is so easy to work with and it's so responsive and you don't have to worry about it collapsing.
Yeah.
So, if you're starting with a good bread flour and you're fermenting, you know, doing a long fermentation with a sourdough starter, then you get a really amazing flavors out of it. Because there's no whole wheat and there's no bran, your starter is going to produce more lactic acid, which is going to give the bread a more floral sort of taste and smell. Mm. So it's different. I really like it. I always feel a little bit guilty baking it and eating it, but it's really enjoyable to bake and eat.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember some of the first sourdoughs I had years ago, at some of the restaurants here in Toronto. Like, have you ever heard of The Keg?
No.
Yeah. It's a famous kind of Canadian restaurant. And one of their famous things was they bring out these little small sourdough boules that they would serve with their, you know, amazing steak dinner, you know, and they bring it out beforehand with this kind of like this little garlic butter, and it would melt in your mouth. Mm. And I think that's what I want to try to get with this. I don't know if I want like an open crumb or I want more of a dense bread. So I think I'm going to try to experiment to see if I can get that little bit of a denser, you know, kind of a doughier, sourdough loaf that I was used to kind of, growing up with when I did, you know, go out to restaurants and have that.
Yeah, for sure. You know what I've been playing with a lot too lately is adding a real small amount of fat and then emulsifying it with the addition of lecithin powder. So, for example, I was doing some Vietnamese-style baguettes for banh mi sandwiches, and so I would add different kinds of oil, rice bran oil, olive oil, just kind of playing around with it. And I got to the point where I was adding about 5% fat or oil to that formulation, just enough to sort of tenderize the crumb and to make the crumb a little bit more cohesive without it tasting anything like a rich dough bread. But normally when you're making, you know, breads with the addition of fat, you'll have egg in there as well, and the lecithin in the egg acts as an emulsifier. But then once you start doing that, then you start getting into, like, you know, white bread and brioche sandwich bread, you know, territory. So I've been adding 1% lecithin powder to my dough formulation and then adding that 5% oil. And the lecithin, it emulsifies, or excuse me, yeah, the lecithin emulsifies the oil with the water in the bread formulation and gives you a really beautiful rise and oven spring that you normally wouldn't get. So you might want to play with that a little bit, because if you add just a tiny bit of, say, olive oil to your white bread flour formulation, it's not going to be noticeable. To anybody else who slices into it and takes a bite, it's just going to be like a really awesome lean dough, sourdough bread style. But you'll know the secret behind it, and it's just that little touch of fat gives you a much, just that extra softness of a crumb, and it gives you a really nice oven spread.
Yeah, myself, I haven't had a chance to experiment actually with adding any fats to the bread. So that's one thing I'm definitely keen on learning more of. And I'll have to, I'm writing this down. This is awesome. So lecithin powder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and a little bit of oil. You were saying you're doing about 1%?
1% lecithin and 5% oil.
All right. And what is lecithin What is lecithin?
So lecithin is it's an emulsifier. It's technically a surfactant that's in egg yolks. So when you're making like a mayonnaise or aioli, it's the lecithin in the egg yolk that actually will emulsify your sauce. Mm-hmm. But also, I supposedly it's really good as like for detoxifying your liver. So you can find it in health food stores because people will make like smoothies and shakes out of it. So it's a powerful emulsifier, and it's what's nice about it is since it comes in a dry powder form, just you add that to you, so you blend it into your flour while your flour is still dry, and then you just do your normal mix. And lecithin does have a tendency to clump, so I always just sift it through any sort of wire screen you have, just to make sure it doesn't clump up on you. And then disperse it into the flour before you add any water.
Cool. All right. Thanks for that. That's great.
Yeah, if you might want to play around with, especially for your white loaves, play around with diastatic malt powder.
Oh, I've heard of that. Yeah.
Because that's just like they just wet barley and let it sprout, and then then it's malted. Then they dry it and they grind it up. And so it's an enzyme that just releases the sugars in the complex starches of the flour a little bit more easily. And so your yeast loves it, whether it's commercial yeast or sourdough yeast. It supercharges it. So you get really awesome oven springs. But also, too, it will give more shelf stability to your loaf. So when you're selling loaves of bread to other people, and maybe it's going to be a couple of days before they actually slice into it, the diastatic malt powder, and you don't necessarily want to use it in every situation, but it's something to play around with. Okay. It gives a little bit of a like extra sweetness to the loaf without it tasting sugary.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. So awesome. Great, great. Cool.
What's your, how much bread are you producing a week right now?
It went from just, four loaves, this week I did 10.
Wow.
Yeah. And I have a few more people on board, for next week's order. So I don't know. I just sent out my, order email on Friday morning, and already I'm up to 5. So hopefully we'll see by Sunday. Sunday is the due date. So we'll see how many people get back to me.
That's great. And so are you baking all the bread in one day?
Yeah. Typically I prep on Monday, bake on Tuesday, and deliver on Wednesday.
Okay. So can you walk us through your workflow a little bit when you're making this bread?
Yeah. Monday morning, 6 a.m., I'm up, feed the starter, and that usually, that goes for about 12 hours. So when I get home from work, I'll mix my flour and water about an hour or two, just ahead of time, let that sit. And then, I mix, that's when I start mixing in my ingredients, salt, and anything else, that I have, unless I'm going to fold it in. Like if I do olives, I won't add that into the mix. I'll fold that in during the process. If I'm mixing, that'll just be the salt and yeast. Mix it. And then do a series of stretch and folds every 20 minutes for a couple hours. Goes in the refrigerator overnight for around 18 to 20 hours. So by the time I get home from work on Tuesday, I just pull it right out of the fridge. So there's no warm-up time. I just found with pulling it out of the fridge, it's kind of that perfect timing. And working with colder dough, what I've been experiencing with that has been awesome. Mm-hmm. It holds its shape well. It gives really good oven spring. I also, when I do the tension pulls on it as well, it creates an awesome tension surface. So I love working with straight cold dough out of the fridge. So once I do my cutting and shaping, they go in the bannetons for their final proof. my bake on Tuesday, I was doing two separate batches. I did my first batch of five when that was in the oven. I let my other batch of five proof, pulled them out of the oven, exchanged it, did the other five in the oven, and then let them cool for about close to that 24-hour mark, and then deliver Wednesday.
Awesome. Now, your proofing stage, are you doing that at room temperature?
I am, yes. Yeah.
Okay. And how long does that proof take?
That varies. Right now, you know, it's pretty warm here for December in Toronto. We just got up to 12 degrees and sunny the other day, which is pretty insane. You know, usually we have some snow and it's like minus 10 or 20. So, you know, right now.
And that's 12 degrees Celsius for all my American friends.
Sorry. Yeah, 12 degrees Celsius. So we're having a pretty warm December right now. So I think right now I'm proofing around the hour 15 mark.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I nailed it the other night. I was going about an hour and a half, and I think that was just a little too long from what the crumb looked like afterwards. So I downed it about 15 minutes, and that seemed to really pull things together a little better.
What did the crumb look like that was telling you overproofed it?
Yeah. You know, just getting these larger irregular holes, especially towards the outside of the crumb, right? More along the sides and the top. That's what when I sent that out there, I got a lot of feedback about that. And then all my other experimentation and bakes, you know, like longer proofing and shorter proofing. And that's what's happened. So I think that seems to be the case. It sounds like with overproofing is you don't get that oven spring, and then you get those large irregular holes kind of, hanging on the outside of the crumb.
Yeah. Well, your bread is looking beautiful. The one I'm checking on your Facebook page.
Thanks, man.
And I'll be sure to link to you in the show notes. You have a website, or are you just doing a Facebook page right now?
Just a Facebook page for now. I'm not really a computer kind of guy, but a buddy, a buddy of mine's like, dude, do at least a Facebook page, right? So yeah. He came over one night and set me up real quick, and so I'm just going with that for now.
Well, what I'm enjoying is, I mean, I always just love looking at some good bread porn, you know, I mean, and that's, you know, I mean, that's what I'm seeing on your Facebook page, but also too, it gives, the home baker a really cool perspective into someone who has really, you know, mastered their craft and is doing a large production for a home kitchen. You know, you don't have any sort of commercial equipment. You're just doing it in a home oven with a bunch of Dutch ovens. And so I think for people to look at your workflow, especially if they're really into sourdough bread baking, would be really smart for them to do and be interesting, because, you know, it's one thing to be like, oh, you know, here's how a professional baker does it with his, you know, $20,000 deck oven with steam injection. And here's how he puts out, you know, a couple hundred loaves of bread in a single day.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I mean, maybe someone wants to bake 10 loaves and give them away for Christmas or take them to a holiday party. And, you know, so looking just through some of your photos that you do on your Facebook page is, I think, a really interesting perspective on how that can be achieved.
Yeah, that's one thing I was hoping for, is just for, you know, regular home bakers like myself to know that they can achieve something like this, especially if they catch the right time at Canadian Tire. And it's really for just my supporters that I have out there, you know, down the block in the community, is I really want to make it kind of interactive for them, so they actually can see, you know, they know who's baking the bread, they know what the process is, and they can actually go on my Facebook page and see the pictures of the steps that I'm going through, and then they get a really better perspective of you know, how bread is baked, how I'm doing at home, and who's doing it, which is my whole theme behind this whole micro bakery thing is really about community.
Yeah, I love it. I love the idea. I love what you're doing, and that's also too why I wanted to have you on Stellacast, is because it's such a great success story, even though you're just doing, you know, 10 loaves a week, right? And you're doing as a part-time. I was really excited about having you on because I've watched your journey firsthand.
Oh, thanks.
You know, and it's awesome because there's so many people who, you know, they'll think to themselves, hey, you know, I made some loaves of bread, now I want to get into sourdough bread baking. And then you see it on our forums all the time, all the troubleshooting questions, and then people kind of, you know, some people will get frustrated. Other people like you just keep on coming back for more and more and more. And I, you know, but nobody starts off being able to make awesome sourdough bread. You know, everyone has to struggle through some failures. Everyone has to struggle through some frustrations. And so I think it's nice to show, you know, someone like you who doesn't have a professional background, because I think sometimes people, they just assume, oh, you know, because Jacob's a professional chef, you know, this stuff is easy to him. And I try and express, like, no, I failed many, many times in everything I've ever done with food or bread baking. But to see someone like you, and you can almost follow your trail of progression on the Stella Culinary Forums from when you first really seriously started getting into sourdough bread baking, and now you're over on the fresh loaf, just tearing it up and getting front page exposure for some of the beautiful bread you're putting out.
Yeah, it is hilarious, man, and it feels pretty good. I was the other day, I was just looking back at some of my first loaves actually on Stella, you know, back like 2 years ago, and I was like, holy crap, those were some pretty crappy loaves, you know, and they probably tasted not that good. But it is interesting to see that progression up until I think one point I had an awesome oven spring. And I was so ecstatic, and I, you know, posted it, and you got back to me, and you're like, yes, this is what I wanted you to have. This is the success I wanted you to have. And so that, you know, the support that you've been giving me through this whole thing, Jacob, you know, has been incredible, and it's allowed me, just a regular home baker, which is hopefully what we want people to understand, is that if you keep going, you can achieve these kind of results. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I remember that post specifically because I know we were going, I think we were discussing like Red Fief and you were having some issues with some oven spring. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, you know, let's pull it back for a second. Let's kind of simplify the process just so you can see and feel what it's like to really have that sourdough loaf that gives you that good oven spring. Because because sourdough is complex in and of itself. Then you start adding, you know, delayed fermentation and whole wheat flours and, you know, einkorn and all sorts of crazy grains, and you start adding that to the equation, just makes it more and more complex. But yeah, I it's funny that you bring that post up, because I specifically remember that post and thinking to myself, yeah, we gotta win. You know, like,
yeah,
like, mm-hmm. that's awesome. We, because there's people who struggle through it, and sometimes they'll just disappear, and I find myself thinking, well, did they ever, you know, achieve that loaf of sourdough that they were after, or did they just give up?
And yeah.
And so yeah. When you posted that sourdough, I was so stoked.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. You know, just going through all these different forums and posts and seeing what people are doing, you know, I think they did what I did at the time, right? They jump into it, they get excited, and then they just overthink things and overdo things, and then that totally turns you off. Because it happened to me, right? I think I did. I think I stopped you know, baking bread for, I don't know how long it was, but and just because I was, you know, down about it, it wasn't getting those results, and then that's when I came back into it again. And that advice that you gave me was just to pull back and really start from the basics until you get used to everything about it, because it is so, you know, friggin' complicated, right? Like, it's at first, you know, you just don't know what the hell you're doing. Yeah. until you really stick with it, and then you get to know the feel of your product, right? You just can't sit there and do. I'm stretching and folding and not pay attention. You know, for me now, I look at my results. I look at my dough, what stage is going through, the feel of it, right? Like squeezing it, stretching and folding it. You know, what's it like when you're mixing by hand? I really take note of that mentally, and I think that has really helped me out. And I don't know if I was to give advice for a newbie out there like myself, it would be just start with the basics. Don't even do any delayed fermentation. Just go with like something so basic until you get a stronghold where you feel confident enough that you can move on to that. Because I think I even tried some overnight fermentation, and I stopped for like a year. I didn't even bother with it because the first couple times I was like, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I just, it turned me off completely. And then I finally got back into it, just very slow steps.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, I mean, to me, that's what really connects me with bread baking, but also I think what makes it so frustrating, because I'm a very analytical person. I want to be able to break down exactly what's going on. I mean, you know, you listen to my last sourdough series, and I mean, we get, you know, really deep in the waters with all the technical detail, but at the end of the day, you know, you still have to develop a feel for the bread, you know, and that's also too what I love about bread baking is, you know, you take something like a simple sourdough boule. Everyone starts with the same four ingredients: flour, water, salt, yeast. And the yeast is coming not even from a canister; it's coming from the, you know, their natural environment, something that they've cultivated. So you have these four basic ingredients, and based upon the technique and the care and the understanding that you give these ingredients, you get this broad spectrum of bread. Everything from just a really shitty sourdough loaf all the way down at the bottom to the most amazing bread you've ever tasted. And it really is like one of the best examples of what technique can do for you once you understand it and achieve it, because it with bread baking, unlike anything else, it really takes a lot of practice. You know, I can show you how to saute some vegetables, and you can probably get that down in a day. But even though I can, you know, if you go to like a bread baking school or a class, it's going to take you, you know, months of practice just to learn how to form a boule properly. I mean, just the difference in how an experienced bread baker will form a boule and how someone doing it for the first time forms it is completely different. They get completely different results. And just that simple act of forming will influence their oven spring, which will influence the interior crumb, which also influences how thin the crust gets during the oven spring, the texture of the crust. And that just comes from forming the loaf. And people want to have this perfect sourdough boule or just this perfect baguette the first time out of the gates. And it's like, no, you got to give yourself a chance. You know, you're going to develop some muscle memory. You got to learn how to form that loaf. You got to understand the timing of the bread, you know, when it starts to overproof or you are all of a sudden finding yourself in a colder environment. So it's taking longer for all these reactions to occur. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's the beautiful thing about bread baking.
Oh, man, I was going to say something about that, and I totally forgot. Maybe it'll come back to me in a sec. Yeah.
That's okay. Yeah, hop in if you remember it, because, you know, that happens to me all the time. You have these, like, rambling conversations, and then you're like, oh, shit, I totally forgot what I was going to say. What was that?
Yeah, exactly.
That was going to be such a brilliant point, too.
Well, I mean, you put master by my name. I gotta be on the ball here, right?
Yeah, like, right. Yeah.
I think I do agree with you, though. You know, like my wife Alexi and I got into just cooking good food. I don't know, like a few years back, we started actually just everything from scratch at home. Even pasta now, like I make my own, and I think just because of that, that's really kind of put more of a passion into me about where my food comes from, for one thing. Like, so I know what ingredients I'm using. I know that there's no additives, preservatives, you know, all that crap. And plus, I find, like, when we started cooking all of our food at home, you know, we love Italian food. We've got a great Little Italy here in Toronto. We used to go to our favorite Italian places, fettuccine alfredo, you name it. And yeah, hey, what the hell? I'll try making my own pasta at home. And it was awesome. And we go back to these restaurants and we're like, wow, they suck. Yep, uh-huh. You know, like their pasta is soggy, their sauce is oily. And so we only hardly go out now. We've kind of narrowed it down to just these few restaurants that we go out to. And it's kind of, you know, tied over into baking bread, right? Like I'm pretty addicted. I've got this passion with it and I want to run with it, man. And it's so true, you know. You're just handling this live action in front of you, right? And there's so many variables that can happen at any time. But once you've got that down, it's like you say, it's your own, you're developing your own technique. And no matter how much I did try other people's, you know, bread baking books at first, like what Chad Robertson, Tartine, a friend lent my Ben, who I mentioned at the beginning, he lent me that book, and you know, I read through it, and Peter Reinhardt. But I think, you know, once you develop your own style and your own technique, man, that's where, I don't know, for me, that's where I'm addicted now, because it's awesome, man. Like, you can, once you know the stuff, you can change it around and then you actually know what the hell you're doing or you're experimenting and you know why that went wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's why I always preach, you know, look at this, is what works for me, but you have to get to know your starter, because it all starts from there. You know, get to know your starter, get to know your environment. And, you know, that's also, too, why I like to go in depth into the science behind bread baking and sourdough baking, because even though, you know, it might be too much for the casual fan who might even get scared off because there's so much technical details, you're trading that for people like you who will pick portions of these technical details and then, you know, rework them into new forms that I myself have never even thought of. And then you'll see all these different bread bakers expressing these concepts and these ideas in their own personal ways, which is really, I think, the most important thing of cooking in general. You know, it's always, you know, as someone who teaches other people how to cook, the last thing I want people to do really is to follow my recipes and be a carbon copy of me, because that's boring, you know. I always try and give people like the underlying information to give them the at least some sort of understanding of why I do things the way I do them. But then I always hope that they will, you know, take that information and make it their own, because then you start seeing who they truly are expressed through their food.
That's an awesome way of putting it. It's almost like people are kind of scared to take that step, right? They want to copy a recipe and have it exactly come out as they see it in a book, or, you know, the beautiful picture of that plate of food or bread. And that's just not the way it is. I still see people posting, and it's understandable. You know, I was like that too, where, you know, you come in and you're writing out this recipe and they say, I did this exactly as they said, everything, but look at it, didn't turn out. And then you get all these replies saying, well, of course, you know, you're living like just a small, you know, one of the small examples is you're living here, they're living there. It's not going to turn out the same, especially when it does come to bread baking and that environmental aspect, right? Like that's the big thing I learned is everything like temperature, you name it, man, it's humidity, right? When I started getting into just hearing all about that, you know, a couple of years ago, I was just like, I can't believe that has to do with it, right? Like humidity can add moisture to the dough and up the percentage, like,
oh yeah.
So I know it. So that just blew my mind. And I, for me now that I'm learning more and more all the time, and I'm so addicted, I really am now wanting to get into the science of it and find out what is really going on, right? Like what's going on with this extended fermentation? Why is my crumb structure breaking apart? And somebody a couple weeks ago up on the Fresh Loaf, you know, threw out like protease. And I was like, what the hell is protease, right? So I look it up and I'm for an hour, I'm like, this is awesome. And I'm on my computer looking away and trying, not knowing what the hell they're saying on this, you know, about this protease. But, you know, reading it through three or four times, I started to kind of understand the concept of it. And so that allowed me then to readjust my formulas and times in trying to work with protease and that extended fermentation. So yeah, so for me, I'm now starting getting into the science of it more, because I think I'm at that step where I am starting to really understand the processes of bread baking.
It's such a deep rabbit hole.
Oh man, you're going down hard, you know.
Yeah, it's funny. It's this whole other world, really a whole other universe. I remember when I first started getting into bread baking, because I was my first true passion besides cooking was charcuterie, you know, doing all the cured meats. And of course, with the pâtés and terrines, you need some good bread to spread it on. And I really couldn't get good bread where I was at that time in my career. So I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to figure out how to bake the couple of loaves I need a day. And little did I know the kind of just rabbit hole that goes down into, because then you're, okay, well, my bread's dense. What happened? Well, here's like 10 things that could have happened, and here's the science behind it. And just each time you're kind of just you're going deeper and deeper and deeper, and then you get to a point where you have a respectable loaf. You're like, okay, now how can I make this better? Okay, now I have an idea for this test. Okay, that test was a complete miserable failure. Why was that? And each time, you know, you're going down the rabbit hole until you find yourself at 3 a.m., you know, searching Google Scholar for, you know, gluten and gliadin and protease and enzymatic reactions and...
Yeah. It's funny the difference between what you think, you know, what you think sucks and what, when people try your bread, they think is great, right? Like you're so critical of yourself a lot of the times.
Yeah. I think your little operation, just cause I've seen it happen before, it's gonna blow up. You're gonna have a monster on your hands here pretty quick, because it's so hard to get good, consistent bread. You know, even in certain urban areas, it's difficult. And even when you say, okay, well, we can get this kind of, you know, we can get a good bread, there's always going to be people who resonate with your specific style. Because again, you know, when you start expressing yourself through your food, then you have no competition, because people who resonate with your style, they're resonating with you directly. So you might have three other great bread bakers in town, but because someone for whatever reason resonates with your style, they're going to be loyal to you.
And that's awesome.
You know, and as you continue to produce this bread on your journey, I see this, you know, blowing up for you to where you're going to have to make a decision of, you know, do I start cutting people off, or do I look at getting a commercial space?
Oh, man, you know, I've been thinking about that. Actually, it's funny you brought that up. The past couple of days, it's been on my mind. The feeling, you know, I had Wednesday when I went around and delivered my bread, it was, you know, I can't even describe it. People invited me in their house. You know, good new neighbor, friend across the street, Mike, you know, hey man, you got a couple minutes, come on in, you know. And his parents are visiting from Montreal, and I sat down and he offered me a beer, and we were just like shooting the shit for half an hour, and it was awesome. And it took me just to deliver, you know, those not 10 loaves, it took me like an hour and a half, which I love, because that's what I want. That's what I want people to experience as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know what you mean. Like, that rabbit hole's, it could be creeping up in the new year. And do I want to get to a point where, you know, I won't be able to deliver? I don't think so. Right now, I think I like that. I want to stay with that. But, you know, even Mike said he loves the idea. He loves just the concept of it. And he said the same thing. He's like, man, it's going to explode. And I don't know. We'll have to see where it goes from there, Jacob. But like I said, I want to open up my own bakery sometime. So maybe it's going to come down to where I have to rent out some sort of, you know, community kitchen or commercial kitchen, and then up my, you know, up my product from there. Just slow steps. I definitely am not going to be renting out any space sometime soon.
Yeah, and the community kitchens, that's a good next step, because if you get your system in place, you can rent a community kitchen, you know, 2 days a week, you know, or like even 2 half days a week, and do the bread production that you need to get things off the ground without having to assume the massive overhead of a full rental space and investing in the deck ovens and you know, all the stuff that goes along with it.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I see that and it's just like, holy crap, that's just not, you know, it's a lot to take on. I mean, I would love, but
yeah.
I have no idea to right now at this point. I'd be lost in trying to, you know, run a business of that scale. So I think just for me working my way up slow, it's going to give me a great starting point. And it's going to tell me is that space, like, is that commercial space something that I want to get into, or if I'm ready for it, right?
Yeah, that's another, you know, it's a whole other can of worms. I mean, the thing about like a commercial bread bakery, the nice thing is bread is extremely profitable as a product to sell. But the downside is you have to sell a lot of loaves of bread to pay your rent.
Yeah, no kidding, man.
It's, you know, I mean, the kind of production that you need to do, it's like, you know, yeah, you're making, you know, you got like a 15% food cost on a sourdough boule, but you got to sell like a couple hundred a day to pay for your space and your lit. And then, you know, you're not doing a couple hundred a day by yourself. So now you got to have, you know, a couple of hands to help you. You got to have a delivery driver. You know, so there's a lot that goes into it that, you know, some people just, they don't see up front. And I think your approach for taking it slow and building that audience first is a really solid approach.
Yeah, and that's what I want, right? I want that word of mouth, you know, until I get to a point where I have to say no out of my house. I can only have so many, you know, supporters on board with me, because it's just too much to have in my house. And then I'll go from there. I think that's my best bet, is just for now, like we talk about, just taking that one step at a time. And when I get to a point, rethink things. And if that, do I want to go beyond that? Great. How am I going to do that? You know, and then do a test run of that first and then keep going from there.
Yeah, that's great, man. I think It will be a problem that you're going to have, but that's going to be a great problem to have.
You know? Yeah, it's awesome, man. And my exciting thing is that you and I are always going to be in contact about this. Always going to throw you stuff and, you know, and ideas and feedback and whatnot. So I'm excited just to have known you for this like long. It's been awesome. And to have just to know you now, hey, it's lifelong, man. Lifelong.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, maybe if I head out your way sometime, I'll have to drop in and say hi.
Definitely. You know, it's funny too. I have a couple of consulting gigs lined up in Canada for later this year or later in 2016.
Awesome. So, where?
One is in Toronto, and the other one is in Alberta. Mm. So I think those are probably far away from Ontario. I'm not that familiar with the geography of Canada. Mm.
Well, you have one in Toronto, you said?
Yeah.
It's my territory, buddy.
Is it?
It's where I live.
Okay, right on.
Yeah?
Maybe we'll have to hook up when I get out there.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Well, Dave, best of luck to you in all of your ventures.
Cool.
Again, what's your Facebook page?
Reinhardt Breadhouse and Bakery.
Okay, and this is... Let me just double check. I always forget what episode of the Stellacast I'm on, but I want to give people the short code for it, 'cause I'm going to link to your Facebook page. And so, so this is going to be episode 16. So if people go to stellaculinary.com/scast16, we'll have a link to Dave's Facebook page. You can check out all of his photos. And also, too, we'll throw up like some best of posts from both the forum, and then send me some of some links to the things that you post on the Fresh Loaf, and we'll cross post there as well, because I know you have some great threads and some pictures, because I want people to check out your bread and kind of see what it is you're actually doing.
Sure. And from now on, I'll definitely post more on your site. I know I've been off for a while because I was just hitting up the Fresh Loaf with a whole bunch of new, you know, people and a feeling for that area over there. But now I definitely am looking forward to getting back on your site as well.
Awesome. All right, Dave, I appreciate your time and hanging out with us.
Yeah, Jacob, thanks so much. It was finally awesome talking with you, man. It was exciting and thanks for the opportunity.
You got it. And that's it for this episode of Stellacast. Thanks so much to Dave Mott of Reinhardt Breads. I love that name. For hanging out with us and giving us some tips, tricks, telling his story, his evolution into the sourdough world. All the links that we mentioned in this episode can be found at our show notes, stellaculinary.com/scast17. And if you want to download the F-Step curriculum, the same curriculum that I use in my coaching courses and the culinary bootcamp, you can do that at stellaculinary.com. Just click the shop link at the top of the page. The first section is free to make sure that it's what you're looking for. And I look forward to talking with you guys in the next episode.